And our first speaker is Dr. Hugh Ross. And he's speaking on habitability for redemption. And Hugh is an astronomer and the founder and president of Reasons to Believe. Let's welcome Dr. Ross.
Well, thank you. And I'm an astronomer and a pastor. And yeah, the talk is on the habitability for the redemption, not just of human beings, but billions of human beings. Now, I wrote this book last year to show that every event, every component that exists in the universe or galaxy or solar system, and every component or cell of life must be fine-tuned in order for billions of human beings to come into a redemptive relationship with Jesus Christ. It was basically based on a Bible study I did, noticing that every major creation text in the Bible links the doctrine of creation with the doctrine of redemption, which led to a 3-year study of the scientific literature. Is this really the case? And indeed, the result was this book, that indeed every event and every component of creation fills a role. And what I'm going to describe today, just because of the shortness of time, is 3 of those events. The book is several hundred, but I'm going to talk just about these 3. That in order for billions of human beings to come into an eternal relationship with Jesus Christ, we humans must be living at the end of a highly fine-tuned ice age cycle. The sun must be exactly middle age in terms of its nuclear burning history, and we have to be existing at a time of extreme climate stability. And each of these, I'm arguing, is a testimony to God's miraculous intervention on our behalf. Now, what I mean by an ice age cycle is where our planet cycles between 10% ice coverage and 20 to 23% ice coverage. And North America felt the brunt of the ice age cycle. I mean, right now, 10% of our continent is covered with ice, but 26,000 years ago, 55% of our planet was covered with ice. And so North America experiences the greatest impact of the ice age cycle. And here's where we are right now. And the periodicity of the ice age cycle has varied throughout the past 2.6 million years. But for the past 800,000 years, it's been roughly a 100,000 year cycle. Previous to that, about a 41,000 year cycle. Now, I want to first address the question, why do we need to be living in an ice age cycle? And if you pick up the book, I talk about a dozen different reasons why, if you want billions of humans to live on the planet, we have to be living in an ice age cycle. For brevity, I'm going to look at just 2. Namely, that we need the melting of glaciers left over from the last ice age to water the soil-rich agricultural plains. And 2, we need wind-blowing dust coming off the high plateaus and mountains as the ice from the last ice age recedes. You get very high winds being generated as that ice rapidly recedes. And what that does is it enriches or fertilizes the great agricultural plains. So for example, the plains of North America, China and India and Europe get fertilized every 100,000 years thanks to the ice age cycle, and we're able to water those great plains thanks to the fact that we have the ongoing melting of ice left over from the last ice age cycle. As you can see in this map, that turquoise shows you the places of the world during the last ice age where there was more than 1,000 feet thickness of ice. Canada, for example, all of it was covered by about 3,000 feet of thickness of ice. And as all that ice melts, you have this wind being blown over, depositing dust on the agricultural plains. And as that ice recedes, it continues to water those plains. So for example, you see there's a big ice sheet over the Tibetan Plateau. And as that water melts, it explains why India and China are able to produce food to feed 3 billion human beings. Now, the second requirement is you want the sun to be almost exactly middle age. And to the best of our measurements, it is exactly middle age in terms of its nuclear burning cycle. And the reason why is that stars are like human beings. They're unstable when they're young. They're unstable when they're old. They're maximally stable when they're middle age. But in the case of stars, it's a much more extreme situation. So, for example, this shows you the solar flaring activity, and this also is consistent with the ultraviolet and X-ray radiation coming out of the sun. And this is what it looks like over the nuclear burning history of the sun. Now, the vertical scale is logarithmic. There's a factor of a million between the maximum and the minimum. And that dotted line represents where we are right now. So you can see that right now in the nuclear burning history of the sun is at the extreme minimum of flaring activity as well as extreme minimum of far ultraviolet and X-ray radiation. Now, about 10 years ago, physicists were looking at neutrinos coming out of the sun, and those neutrino measurements told us that the sun entered an exceptionally unprecedented luminosity stability phase beginning less than 50,000 years ago, and it will end in less than 50,000 years into the future. So we're living in this somewhat less than 100,000 year window in which we have extreme luminosity stability. And we're going to quickly exit it, and previously that wasn't the case. So flaring minimum occurs when the sun is 4.57 billion years old, which is how old it is right now, and you get extreme luminosity stability lasting for less than 100,000 years at that point in time. But this leads to an apparent contradiction in terms of the requirement of humans must be living during an ice age cycle. Why? Because for 90% of the history of Earth, Earth has had no ice at all. I mean, in the minimum of the ice age cycle, we have 10%. But for 90% of Earth's history, it had zero. And the reason why that's a problem is the sun gets brighter and brighter as it gets older and older. Now, this particular graph here shows you that when the sun is extremely young, it's accumulating mass, which makes it brighten very quickly. And it starts to lose mass, which makes it dim, and then it stops losing mass in a significant way. Nuclear burning kicks in, and the nuclear burning causes the sun to get gradually brighter and brighter as it gets older and older. Now, we have life showing up at about 0.7 billion years after the sun is born, and so life exists during that period when the sun is getting progressively brighter and brighter. But for 90% of that time, no ice at all. What I want you to notice is that the sun is at its very brightest in the history of life on planet Earth, and yet we have ice on Earth. How do we explain the fact that we got all this ice when the sun has never been brighter than it's ever been in its past history? Well, what you'll see in a couple of chapters of this book is thanks to five unprecedented simultaneous tectonic events, that in spite of the sun being so very bright, the Earth is cool enough that we can have an ice age cycle. And the first of those tectonic events is what happened to Antarctica. It was attached to Australia, broke off from Australia, but remained attached to South America, and then got detached from South America and moved quickly down to the South Pole. And when it hit the South Pole, the tectonic motion stopped. So here it broke off from South America, went down to the South Pole. When it got to the South Pole, and as you can see, it's bang on top of the South Pole. The other thing you notice is you got a wide swath of open ocean water all around Antarctica. And that's that wide ocean swath that makes Antarctica the most isolated continent on the planet. But because of that wide swath of open ocean water, you get a powerful ocean current circulating around Antarctica. It also generates powerful winds. You may have heard of the Roaring Forties. It refers to minus 40 to minus 55 south latitude, where you get these powerful circulating winds and you get this powerful current. And that works to cool the Antarctic continent. And so it's the movement to the South Pole plus this powerful circulation that made Antarctica cold enough that ice began to form. 3 million years ago, no ice in Antarctica. All that ice is relatively recent, and it built up because of that circulation and the position. That circulation also causes a cold current to move up from Antarctica through the Atlantic. And so all the continental land masses that are adjacent to the Atlantic Ocean get cooled down thanks to this current welling up from Antarctica. So that's tectonic event number one. At the same time, we have the movement of Greenland. Greenland was situated just off of Newfoundland and then moved 1,100 miles north. Now, today it ranks as the most northern landmass on planet Earth. But the other thing that happened is it moved 1,100 miles north, it moved over a hot plume, which basically it's hot upwelling mantle material coming up towards the surface. And what that did is it took the Greenland island, which had an average elevation of less than 1,000 feet above sea level, and pushed it up to 8 to 10,000 feet above sea level. So it's a combination of its northward movement and the pushing up the landmass to 8 to 10,000 feet that cooled it enough that ice could form over Greenland. And today it ranks as the second largest store of ice on planet Earth, second to only Antarctica. Tectonic event number three is what happened to Pangaea. Quarter of a billion years ago, we had just one huge supercontinent, but it broke apart and the seven continents began to move. Actually, eight continents were moving. But what you notice here is how most of the landmass now moved into the northern hemisphere, and most of it towards high latitudes, and moved in such a way that you have landmass now almost completely enclosing the Arctic Ocean. And landmass is always colder than open ocean water, and so that worked to cool the Arctic Sea sufficiently that you have the ice cap forming. Now, what I need to mention all along here, this being an audience, you probably know this, is that ice reflects sunlight more efficiently than any other thing on Earth's surface. So once you get ice forming, it reflects sunlight away, which works to cool the planet. So we go from a planet that had no ice at all, where you got a huge pack of ice over Antarctica, another one over Greenland, and a third one over the Arctic Sea, and this causes a lot of sunlight to be reflected away to outer space. Tectonic event number four is what happened in North and South America. I told you earlier you got this cold water welling up into the Atlantic Ocean, which cools off the continental land masses that had joined the Atlantic Ocean. But there was a problem. There was a big ocean gap between North and South America, which allowed warm equatorial Pacific Ocean water to move from the Pacific into the Atlantic, which blunted the cooling effect of the cold water coming up from Antarctica. But 3 million years ago, we had the formation of the Isthmus of Panama. And now there was a landmass blocking the flow of warm Pacific Ocean water into the Atlantic, which dramatically cooled the land masses that were adjoining the Atlantic Ocean. So this is what it looks like today, where we actually have a barrier of land mass running north and south, preventing Pacific Ocean water from any significant contact with the Atlantic Ocean. But the most dramatic and important of these five tectonic events is what happened to the eighth continent, namely what happened to the Indian subcontinent. It was attached to the island of Madagascar, well below the equator. It broke off and began to move forward, northward. But it moved at the unprecedented tectonic speed of 22 centimeters per year. Now, it doesn't sound like much, but that's a factor of 11 times faster than what geophysicists consider a rapid tectonic plate movement. So this, in fact, ranks as the fastest tectonic event we know of in the history of the Earth. And because of the speed with which the Indian subcontinent was moving northward, it began to crumple up the seafloor between the Asian continent and the Indian subcontinent. And that explains why we see seashells on top of the Himalayas. The Himalayas are crumpled up seafloor. And because of the speed with which India collided into Asia, it dramatically pushed up those land masses, and not only pushed up the Himalayas, it pushed up everything behind it. The Tibetan Plateau, which was less than 1,000 feet above sea level, today ranks as a little more than 17,000 feet above sea level. And it's 1 million square miles. So you got 1 million square miles of landmass near the equator that's 17,000 feet above sea level or higher. And because of that elevation, ice and snow began to permanently form over the Tibetan Plateau. In fact, if I were to ask you, what's the third largest store of ice on planet Earth today? It's not the store of ice in the Arctic ice cap. That ranks fourth. What ranks third is the store of ice over the Himalayas and the Tibetan Plateau. And because it's so close to the equator, it reflects sunlight. The ice there reflects sunlight four times more efficiently than the ice over Greenland, the Arctic Ocean, and Antarctica. So this actually has the most dramatic cooling effect on planet Earth because of how close the ice is to the equator. Now, take any one of these five events out of the picture, you don't get ice. It takes all five happening simultaneously to get the planet to a point where ice can form, in spite of the fact being the sun being as bright as it is. Now, even so, given how bright the sun is, the cooling effect of these five simultaneous unprecedented tectonic events is barely enough to give us ice, which is why we don't have 50% ice coverage, which is typical of previous ice ages. Previous ice ages, you get a whole lot of ice and it lasts for millions of years. This is a delicately balanced between no ice and lots of ice, which explains why it cycles between 10 and 20%. And what drives the cycles are variations in the orbit of the Earth and the tilt of our rotation axis. Catherine Hayhoe mentioned a little bit about this. However, it's very complex. For example, we astronomers know of five different cycles in the eccentricity of the Earth. It's not just the 100,000-year cycle. You get many other cycles of different periods, a 400,000-year cycle, a 1.5-million-year cycle. And likewise, when we look at the tilt of the Earth's rotation axis, yes, there's a 41,000-year cycle, but there are other cycles as well. And because of all these different cycles, during the ice age, you get chaotic temperature variations. And so, for example, this shows you the last four ice ages. However, that's low resolution. Let me show you the last ice age where we had 23% ice coverage in high temperature resolution. This is what it looks like. So you can see that the temperature is jumping up and down by about 24. Global mean temperature is jumping up and down by about 24 degrees Fahrenheit on timescales of 2 to 3 centuries. Now, we actually have evidence that humans were living during this period. Carbon-14 dating tells us that 35,000 years ago, humans were planting crops. They were harvesting grains. They were grinding the grains. We've actually found the tools they used to grind the grains. They were roasting the grains and making bakery products, but all done on a very small scale, which explains why we didn't discover the archaeological evidence literally until 18 months ago. Very tiny scale. But you can see why. With the temperature jumping up and down that radically, large-scale agriculture simply isn't possible. Early farmers would plant, say, 12 different kinds of crops. 8 would fail. They'd feed their family on the 3 or 4 that made it. Likewise with animal husbandry. We have evidence that they were indeed domesticating animals, but all on a very small scale because of the fact that they didn't have the climate stability to make that possible. What I find truly miraculous is how all these different variations, cyclical variations in the Earth's orbit and the tilt of our rotation axis, all happened to come into sync beginning 9,000 years ago to give us this, where the global mean temperature has not changed by more than 2 degrees Fahrenheit over the last 9,000 years. And it's because of the extreme climate stability and the water we have from the melting of glaciers left over from the last ice age and the fertilization effect of the ice age that we're able to grow enough food to feed billions of human beings. Because now instead of having a 2-acre farm, you can have a 4-square-mile farm. Is this a coincidence? I don't think so. You got an exactly middle-aged sun, 5 simultaneous tectonic cooling events, over 7 sinking orbital cycles. And what do we see in the scripture? Before me was a great multitude that no one can count, for every nation, tribe, people, and language. We know the Greeks at that time could count up to a billion. So I see that as a biblical statement that God intends that it wouldn't be a small number of humans that would be redeemed, but it literally would be billions of us that would have it. But it requires a very highly fine-tuned universe, galaxy, solar system, planet, and life history over the past 3.8 billion years. You can read more in this book. I'll take the rest of the time for questions. Okay.
Thank
yes.
you very much.
Apparent conflict between our blooming population and climate change issues with us moving towards God's maximizing redemption for that many people?
Okay, good question. Some of you all heard that. Basically, you know, how do you reconcile the fact that, you know, we have this very stable climate? How can we maintain the climate? You heard Catherine speak on this. You know, heard the problem. You've got billions of people with technology. It really limits how much time we can sustain that many people, that technology level. Well, we have the promise in the book of Romans that once the full number of human beings that God intends to redeem has been redeemed, he'll replace this universe with a brand new creation. And as an evangelist, I think we're close to fulfilling the Great Commission. But I also think it's our responsibility to maintain this period of extreme climate stability for as long as possible, certainly long enough that we can fulfill the Great Commission. But I think the fulfillment of the Great Commission is within reach. If I had time, I'd give you some statistical evidence for that from the work of Ralph Winter of the U.S. Center for World Mission, but it's in the book Improbable Planet. And so I don't see any contradiction between the Bible statements that we're to take care of this planet in the best possible way. In fact, you'll see in the previous book, Hidden Treasures in the Book of Job, there are things we can do to extend this extreme climate stability that would actually vastly boost the economy of the world, which means you're going to get Republicans voting for it and you're going to get Democrats voting for it. In the back. Would have contributed to what?
To cooling.
To cooling. Yes, in fact, that's a concern. Because if you actually look at the previous ice ages, whenever the temperature, global mean temperature, rose to a little more than 2 degrees centigrade above where it is right now, the planet rapidly drops into a severe ice age. And every ice age in the ice age cycle has gotten progressively more severe, and that's because the Tibetan Plateau is continuing to go up. Right now, India is moving at 5 centimeters per year. So the Himalayas are getting higher, the Tibetan Plateau is getting higher, and you're correct, that does remove carbon dioxide. And during the last ice age cycle, the carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere got down so low, it was actually a threat to photosynthesis. And there's concern that the next ice age could actually drop the carbon dioxide level below 150 parts per million. And if that were to happen, the crops we depend upon would no longer be able to produce the food that we need. So yeah, there are dire consequences as we move into the next ice age. And there's actually a very good model explains why global warming brings on an ice age. Global warming will melt the polar ice cap. In fact, in my lifetime alone, half of the polar ice cap has gone away. And so if the other half goes away, you now got open ocean water absorbing heat from the sun, which causes more water vapor to evaporate, which causes more snow to fall over Siberia and Canada. You say, well, wouldn't Canada be warmer? Well, that part of Canada, instead of being 50 below in the winter, would be 40 below in the winter. You're still going to get lots of snow coming down. If you double the snowfall rate, which is probably what happened during the last ice age, all of Canada and Siberia gets covered with thousands of feet of ice. Oh, one more.
Speaking about a variation, can you talk more about feedback mechanisms where the planet was able to get itself back into a semblance? You said all these orbital frequencies and everything lined up in terms of extensions and disease and so forth. But aren't there other self-correcting mechanisms like more cloud cover from more evaporation from warming pulls the planet in a sort of a self-correcting?
Yes, I mean, it's more complex than what I've indicated here. But that's one reason why I showed you the graph of what was going on from, say, 15,000 years ago to 130,000 years ago, where the temperature is jumping up and down. We astronomers think that that's primarily driven by variations in the orbit of the Earth and the tilt of Earth's rotation axis. But there are other factors that have worked as well, which is why I'm a little skeptical when people say we understand all the natural mechanisms that work to warm and heat the planet. From my perspective, it's really complicated. But I'm thanking God for the fact that he got everything in perfect sync for the past 9,000 years.
Thank you for your work.
You're welcome.
I have a question.
Yes.
Can you speak to some of the evidence that you have seen for human life during the these ice ages?
Yes.
Some examples.
Well, I think the evidence that's most conclusive is carbon-14 dating. They've actually found these tools that were used for grinding. They look just like the grinding tools of Stone Age peoples that live, you know, even in our era. And they actually found evidence that the grains indeed were being roasted. They find that the grains were ground, and they were able to date them through carbon-14 to be 34,600 years old. And the error bar was like plus or minus a couple of hundred years. So
where was that one? Where?
Where was it published?
No. Where is the location around the world, do you remember?
I think one was in Italy, and the other one was in what used to be Yugoslavia. I do cite the two references. So there's actually two separate studies. One that established that it happened 23,800 years ago, the other one 34,600.
Are we all set? All right. Well, let's thank Dr. Ross very much.